How you been?
Doing good.
What's up, Michael?
Doing good.
Not right. much.
No.
I recognize that poster.
Oh, yes. We appreciate it.
Hello, everybody. My name is Kazuha Oda. I'm a singer of the rock band Kazuha from Japan, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
Of Comic Pop License to Read, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we are featuring Hollow World Volume 1, Escape from Limbo. And we actually have C. Malcolm McGannon, the author of the book, with us today to discuss it and talk about it. So he's been on before, so we appreciate you coming back on, Michael.
Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
And this is your first solo book. So what's that feel like?
It's awesome. It's DC and I have both written several books together, and we've both written several books and short stories apart, but finally publishing something or publishing one separately is pretty cool. I know he's working on some as well, but it's pretty nice. Have your name all in bold on that cover. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
And this particular story is something that I've been writing for probably a good 5 or 6 years at least. So okay. I'm very excited about it.
And this is volume one, like we stated. It just came out this year. You can pick it up through Amazon, through the website. Are you pretty much going through incendiabooks.com? Or the McGannon Group? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find us at the McGannonGroup.com or Incendia.com. Incendiabooks.com. Pretty much any of our imprints will lead back to McGannon Group and its shop, which has all of our titles together. So you can find it there.
Cool. And for everybody, he is also the co-author of Charlie Sullivan. Yep. And the Monster Hunter series. And that's where most of our listeners will recognize him from. If there's any new listeners, you can go back and check out that volume, as well as Chaos Obsidiary that he did with DC McGannon as well. So those are some facts that you can go back and look up some of their backlog in their
series. Yeah.
Yes. With this book, it is a first book. Do you already have an idea of how many books it will be, or are you just kind of free-flowing it and just letting it develop naturally?
No, I do have an idea. This is a 10-part serial, so there will be 10 parts in total, and it will be released pretty regularly. It is a serial, so the individual parts are shorter, but they make up a greater whole.
That's the one thing that I did notice about it, was that this was a little bit of a shorter book series than what you are, not a book series, but a shorter book than what you're used to writing, because Charlie Sullivan and the Chaos Subsidiary, those are pretty lengthy.
They're probably a little bit longer, because just the size of the book is a little bit different.
But. Yeah, it is like the physical size is different as well, but it is a shorter word count. But the first two volumes are already released. When all 10 volumes are released, they'll be compiled into a single big story. So I'm pretty excited about that. We'll have, you know, the individual parts to release together in a big set, which will be nice and pretty by the end of it.
I'm trying to find my notes as I'm going here, so sorry. I wrote notes and I'm like, what has happened to them?
One of my favorite things about this book was actually the Hollows, and one of the things that I kind of brought up to you when we were talking about it was it kind of reminded me of Bleach a little bit, but then when I actually got into the book, it was a little bit different. But the concept is still cool. I like the metallic animal aspect of it. How did you come up with something like that?
Honestly, just doodling. It sounds silly to say that. No, I guess I should take that back. Back when I was in college, I was playing with different ideas, and the original idea from Hollow World started out as a simple sketch of, you know, at the time I was playing with the idea of what if different cultures took their monsters and their mythologies and turned them into mechs. And the idea evolved greatly, as you can see, but I think the first drawing I did was I took Baba Yaga's hut, you know, the hut in the forest with the one window and the chimney and the chicken feet, and I tried to make that into like a you know, an old Russian mech. So it has that you know, diesel punk feel to it, or that Cold War era look. And I then went on to other cultures and took different, you know, monsters, like I said, in different aspects, and tried to figure out what their mechs would look like or what their robots would look like. And somewhere along the way, you have I stumble across the almost old London feel that Limbo, the town, has. I was going for kind of that, you know, Sherlock Holmes era, or that steampunk feel that people enjoy, and try to get into some of the gaslit machinery that you and technology that you see in the first two volumes of Hollow World. And along the way, the Hollows were developed. And the Hollows, I can't say too much about them, but everybody thinks that they are, you know, just that, just automatons, just almost these robotic creatures that, you know, just patrol the streets and keep Limbo safe. But as you quickly find out reading the book, they're very much alive and sentient and very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with we're just talking about Volume 1, because that's all I've had time to read. We do have Volume 2. I think Jonathan might have read it, so he might be a little bit into it.
Been wanting to read it, and it's just like I had enough money to buy the first volume, and I just didn't have enough money to get the second one. So it's on my list, though.
Yes, and I don't think I actually noticed that the Hollow Men were metallic, just that they were homunculi. The
homunculi?
Yeah.
There are a lot of things I took from inspiration, or took inspiration from in, like, you know, stories of alchemy and alchemists. And one of the big things about Limbo is that a lot of its city is powered by homunculi. And in alchemy, they're called the dwarves in the jars. They're these little creatures that are man-made and sentient. And people think that the homunculi are, you know, what's driving the Hollow Men, but it's yet to be revealed whether or not that's what's inside.
Okay, before we get too far, I want to read the first part here so people kind of know what we're talking about as well, because we kind of danced all around this but haven't really talked about what the book's about. But just to read from the inside of the book. And if I pronounce this wrong, I apologize, Michael.
No worries.
Lucas has served Sir Patrick Doyle and his estate for most of his life. It's custom for a boy on his 19th birthday to leave his life of servitude and venture into a new life on his own. And so Lucas leaves behind a life of obscurity to take his place in the world, except Lucas has never meant to leave. And now all hell has been released to find him. Lucas very quickly realizes that Doyle and the other nobles are willing to stop at nothing to bring him back home. But why? What could they possibly want with a lowly servant? And then along the way, he meets up with a street urchin, basically, by the name of Kit. I won't go into the second part of that, but she's pretty much just a pickpocket type, Oliver Twist almost type character.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah.
they meet up and the adventure begins for them, and the chase is on, as it says here. So, but I did really, like we've been already talking about, it's very steampunky feel. And this is one, and I'm going to talk about the size of the book and where you guys have been at a little bit, since we kind of do know each other. So that kind of helps a little bit when visiting with you. What this really reminds me of is the packaging, because I want to do this before I forget and see if it's intentional. I have a feeling it is, but I just want to see. I could be wrong. The size is really similar to a manga, and you have been going to conventions, anime conventions and other conventions. You have the steampunk that's pretty much prevalent there, the anime feel. This, you know, it really feels like you package this purposely to really appeal to that crowd, and because that's what drew me to it right away, is its size. And even the light novels in Japan are roughly this size, maybe just a tad bit taller. But it really has that nice feel where I think you really captured your audience well in this package. So I don't know if it's intentional or not, but congratulations if it was, because it got me.
Thank you. Sorry. Yes and no. The size was something that we actually did spend quite a while and had several conversations on, because it is a bit of a departure from the stuff that we've published so far. And it's smaller, but it feels, I don't know, for me, it's kind of funny to say it this way, but for me, it's a bit more homey to pick up. Like, it's nice and friendly, if that makes sense.
Right.
If you can think of books as friendly like I do, but it's funny that you say that it reminds you of a manga. We've been playing around with ideas of things similar to light novels for a little while now, and Hollow World itself was originally designed to be a graphic novel, and then we have played around with other ideas, releasing it like a radio show or a YouTube series that is, you know, harkening back to the area of old radio dramas. So it's gone through several different iterations in the development phase, and we still intend on releasing it as a graphic novel and a radio show. So the inspiration is definitely there. I wouldn't say that we were specifically going for the manga crowd, but it certainly did help, I feel. And I would agree with you that, I don't know, for me, like I said, it does seem just like a friendly book of that size. So,
even though there are some parts in it that aren't quite so friendly.
Yeah,
definitely.
And we'll leave that for the readers to discover on their own, because I think that would be too much. We want to leave some surprises. Mm-hmm. Want to leave some surprises, because that's kind of at the end of the book. So
yeah.
What did your mom think of with Holly and the rest of your family? Like, ooh. Because probably before this, the closest you've been was with Chaos Subsidiary.
Well, she was actually the first person who read the very first draft of this book. So she knew what was coming. But
okay.
As far as reactions from other family members, actually, my grandmother just finished reading it, I think, a few weeks ago. And I didn't expect her to. She's read the Charlie Sullivan series from us, but she expressly did not want to read Chaos Subsidiary because she knew exactly what, you know, what she would be getting into. And I warned her about this one and said, you know, this one may be a bit much, and yeah. she wanted to read it. There's a particular dinner scene, and I think you both know exactly what scene.
Yes.
I feel like that's one of the high tension scenes in the book, and she said after reading that she couldn't eat for a little while, but she enjoyed it. She got through it and said she really enjoyed the story overall. So
cool.
Good response so far.
Well, with is it Lucos? Did I get that right?
Lucos? Yes. Yeah, it's Lucos.
Okay. This is one. I'll be honest with you. Where Jonathan went with Bleach with Hollow. When I first started reading this, because of the word Hollow and world, for some reason I kept thinking this is inside our world, kind of like what Tolkien did with Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So for a while I was kind of like, okay, this city's in the ground and he's going to escape up. And then it was like, I kept reading. I said, okay, now I got to shift my thinking now, because then I realized, oh, okay, this is the steampunk era, and especially when it gets further into the book, so okay. This is a city above ground.
Escape into the Hollow World.
I don't know. We haven't gotten that far. But the Hollows are representative of the creatures more. I believe.
I'm sorry?
The Hollow reference, is that in lieu to the creatures that you created for it, or
the creatures?
Right, the Hollows, Hollow Man.
Oh, there are a couple different themes of Hollow things throughout the series, and I will say this: this definitely does start out with a steampunk feel. But I've always been hesitant to put it in the steampunk category, just simply because the rest of the series will take from different cultures and ideas, and it will keep some of those elements, but they will be a little bit of a departure from that genre overall. So fans of steampunk will definitely have things that they will probably enjoy and appreciate throughout the entire book, but there's a much bigger picture going on, and Limbo, I hesitate to spoil anything, but Limbo is just a small piece of the puzzle that Lucos and Kit have to figure out.
Cool. That's cool. And is Kit roughly about the same age of Lucos, or is she a little mm-hmm. younger?
No, they're about the same.
Okay.
I would say that they're the same age. You know, as an author, you have all the notes written down in notebooks that are piled away. But
and we want to get into that with you on a different show. But part of it is that we've seen you at AFW this past year, and you did a deal on world building, and you talked about your notes, which was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do a little bit about that here, but I really want to save that as well for a separate show, to really get into world building as well with you guys. So, but if for a little bit to tell the audience how you developed this.
This world?
Yes.
Very painstakingly. So the first volume by itself was rewritten probably a good 6 or 7 times.
Oh.
And through all of that, you know, like I said, it started out with the drawing of Baba Yaga's hut, reimagined as Cold War era Russia might have built it.
Okay.
So the world itself is much bigger than you see in the first two volumes. And a lot of that is, of course, unrevealed yet. But you have a major event that happened in this particular world. And suffice it to say that different groups have had to figure out how to survive and rebuild. And this was their way of rebuilding. So this is what they had around them. This is the remnant of culture that they had with them, and this is what they drew from to build up the world. So the entire world building experience for me with Hollow World was really thinking about starting over from scratch with a civilization, and I won't say where they got the help from, but they did receive a little bit of help rebuilding. And you will see the answers to that as you go along. But, you know, they take what they have that remains and they build up from there. So what you have is a lot of Gothic architecture that you see throughout the city of Limbo.
Okay.
And, you know, their way of trying to survive and stay safe with the very little that they have.
Okay. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Don't want to get too involved because I know you won't read the books. So can understand.
There's a lot of mystery. I can't wait.
There is a lot of mystery in there.
I can't wait for it to be revealed.
With Lucos, it's pretty much, you can't really call him a teenager, just young adult, kind of in the rebellious stage because he's told he can't do something that he wants to do. So that's kind of a typical character you get. But you have Kit, which, and then you have, I think it was Begor, two female characters in here that are really strong. One of them's almost the Cruella de Vil type character. And then you have Kit, like I said earlier, kind of an Oliver Twist type of character. Mm-hmm. But they're both really strong women. So it's nice to see, you know, they're not being stereotypical anymore. The authors and you are taking notice and saying, we're people. Let's have a story.
Yeah.
There are definitely archetypes that everybody sticks to in the story, but I did try to break away. And I mean, Lukos does have that moment of rebellion, but for his entire life, he's been... and you find out pretty early on that there's something different about him that causes him to be kind of ostracized by the other young men that are serving the noble that he's assigned to. So there's something that keeps him apart, and he's kind of isolated. But he tries to keep to himself, and he tries to obey and be a good servant. And then when... you know, you've taken all of that for 19 years of your life, and you expect to finally be free. He can't handle it when he's told he can't be free. So he takes the matters into his own hands, and kind of he does rebel a little bit, and he gets in way over his head, unfortunately. So I think what Kit sees in that, and Kit has been, you know, on the street. She's that typical survivor type that, you know, likes to keep to herself, doesn't like to get too close to anybody so she doesn't get hurt. She sees that innocence about him, that he's never been in this world that she's grown up in and seen all the grime, and it hasn't affected him. So he's still naive and innocent, even at her age, and something about that is fascinating to her. So, you know, they both kind of go out of their own characters, trying to discover something that they find new in the world.
Okay, and... with the other characters, without going too much into it, we do mention Lord Doyle. He's the nobleman I think you were speaking of with Lukos, and that's developed a little bit more into the book, and they'll find out about him with Zeb. Mr. Zeb and Mr. Lucy. I hope these aren't based on anybody you know.
I have a question about Mr. Lucy.
Yes.
Is he... and just the name of it, I mean, it was very particular to me. Just the name of it, is that a spinoff of some certain demon that's down there?
There's wordplay.
What do you mean?
It's Lucy the one from the movie. It could also be the movie Lucy.
Oh yeah, there's the movie Lucy.
I'm talking about the devil, Lucifer.
I know you are. I got to give grief.
There's a lot that I can't say. I'll say that. But if you look at the names of everybody involved, from Lukos to Mr. Zeb to...
Got it.
To Bel Begor and, you know, your different characters, there's a lot of thought that I put into the main cast of characters.
And I'm beginning to catch the drift on the names. So I'm kind of a little bit right, but... a little bit wrong.
I'm just waiting for Zeb to say, Lucy?
Wrong.
That'll be revealed in time. Mr. Lucy is an important part of the story, but he's somebody that you probably won't see, at least for a little while.
Huh. Okay. Did you have anything, Logan? I'm sorry.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say something.
Well, there's the... obvious, they're bound like some demons of stuff do. They're bound to the servants.
Okay.
Down at the...
to a degree? I can see that to a degree. So it's all a little bit, like you said, wordplay.
Except for Lucy proved it false.
Logan, you're going to have to talk louder in your mic.
Didn't they actually explicitly state it until Lucy proved it false, or was that another one?
Ooh.
And then the one you called a Cruella de Vil type character was similar to that in that she literally had to take orders when commanded.
Oh yeah, she, you know, she was the, I guess, the correctional officer in a prison where Doyle was kind of like the commandant, and she got her orders from him to a degree.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
She was the... oh, hold on. Brothel... owner.
The brothel owner.
Was that Begor? Am I getting it wrong?
No, I'm talking about the one you were calling Cruella de Vil, I think.
Well, I was talking about at the house with Lucas.
Oh.
I think that was
Bell.
Before.
Yeah,
right?
Bell,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, now I know who you're talking about.
Okay,
yeah.
I was like, did I misplace the name?
I was getting confused on which person you were talking about.
Well,
yeah, Begor is somebody that, I guess, as far as what my mom thinks about this book, she is very unsettled by Begor, and very well should be.
I was going to, because Logan brought it up, the head lady of the brothel, she's not in control of herself, is the way I got it. She's under control by somebody, correct?
Ash is in a very peculiar place. She has been allowed to, if you haven't read the book and want to keep everything a secret, I would probably skip the next 30 seconds. but if not, if you read the book, she's in a very peculiar state. So she has been allowed to act of her own free will for many years. Mm-hmm. And now she's being placed in a position where she can't act how she would like to anymore. So she comes into a huge character conflict of deciding whether she wants to continue with the big plan that's in place or act of her own will.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't really want to get too much about. We kind of mentioned some characters, but there's another character that you find out at the end of the book that's more behind-the-scenes. So it's definitely one that's, you don't leave off necessarily right at the end of a scene, per se, but you leave it off where it's a natural ending, but it will progress into the next book.
They've just entered the hollow world, yeah.
What's that?
They just entered the hollow world, yeah.
Could be, possibly, yeah. So, you know, this is one where you're doing it in smaller chunks, you said, like a serial, which is kind of fun, too, because it is a faster read that way.
Right, so. And I personally like to wrap up a story arc without leaving it undone. So there are definitely going to be cliffhangers, but for the most part, each serial, each volume should wrap up its own story arc without, you know, leaving too much unsatisfied. But like I said, the original ideas that I had in my head, I did very much want this to be like a radio drama. So it has that moment of, you know, dun, dun, dun.
Right.
Are they going to cross the bridge without falling into the abyss, or is something else going to happen? So there are definitely going to be things that lead into each of the next sections. But with that being said, this is something that we will be releasing in rapid succession. So, you know, the first two books are already out. We're taking a little bit of a break to focus on some projects that we need to get out right now. And then the next, I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Not at all.
So, yeah, once everything is taken care of, the next set of Hollow World stories will be released in fast succession.
Okay. So they're pretty much already done. They're just waiting to hit the press and out to the
market. For the most part, yeah.
Okay. For the most part. Ah! So there could be some changes.
For the most part, they are, and they're ready to go. But something that I've actually waited on is because serials originally were things that were written kind of as a reaction.
Yeah.
I think it was A Tale of Two Cities that I first read about, you know, where serials come from. And Charles Dickens wrote that in a magazine in 10 different parts, I believe. And it was something that, you know, he navigated over the course of writing all of the pieces and finally bound them all into one book at the end of it. So the story is there and it's ready to go. It's just there are things that I will be waiting on throughout. So,
Interesting little deal. I wonder if this has a little bit of influence on you. You were born in Mannheim, Germany, and I did not realize that until looking at the back here. Were you there for a fairly long period, and is that where you might have developed your interest in the folklore and stuff like that?
No, I actually don't remember much of Germany. We left when I was still pretty darn young. So
okay, so just coincidence then.
Yeah, I definitely have an interest in German folklore and stuff, just as much as I do with any other folklore. But no, I don't remember it that well, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, being such a small book, I don't know if we want to go into much anything else. The only other thing I want to point out to readers is that this is very fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
It has tension in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you're going to take a break to have some breathers or not, or if it's going to be that way through all of it. But this is one where, for a personal collection, like I said, if you're into the light novels, mangas, those type of things, the sci-fi fantasy, this will fit perfectly within your collection. If you're a school library, probably high school level because of some of the scenes, or a public library, this would be one that would capture the... Because it's such a fast-paced book, I think it would capture some of the readers easier than some of the other books that people might try to get them to read. So, good job on making it such a nice read for anybody to pick up and have fun with. So, appreciate
Thank you.
That.
Thank you. That was definitely something that I did want to capture.
I was just curious about something, because with some of these characters, I could see like a spin-off type deal, you know, where they were before they met some of these characters, like Kit. That I would be excited to see some of her adventures before she met Lucas. Have there been any thoughts about that?
There have. As far as Kit goes, like, she's very young, so any spinoff would be probably brief for her, but it's definitely something that I would, if readers wanted to read more about her, I would love to. But definitely for other characters, there is a civil war that's hinted at throughout the first two novels so far, and that is something that the series itself will explain. But if people are more curious about it, I would definitely like to write about that, because that in itself is a very hectic time, full of its own political intrigue, and of course, you know, being a civil war, there's quite a lot of action that does happen back then, before the story even starts, before Lucas and Kit were even born.
With the radio drama you're talking about doing, that would probably be the easiest thing for you to tackle just off the cuff, because you are in the process of recording several podcasts that people can listen to a week under. You can go look under monsterguys.com. The podcast is Monster Guys. You do folklore. You also have the yokai. You have the fairy tales with the fae. So you actually have the sound equipment. So is this something you're looking at producing maybe faster than the graphic novel aspect with the radio drama for something like this?
You know, it's something that we're still considering right now. We have a lot of projects going at the moment, and I definitely want to finish the series of serials before tackling the other, you know, versions of Hollow World.
Okay.
Or at least before releasing the other versions of Hollow World. So that is something that I definitely want to get into as quickly as possible, but being a different medium and everything, I want to make sure that is done right and with high quality. And like I said, harken back to those old radio drama days and produce that same level of quality, if not, you know, higher.
Okay. Get all the sound effects in there and different actors and everything.
That'd Absolutely.
Be fun. That'd be fun.
It's actually something that one of the original versions of Hollow World had ads, like newspaper ads, that were written to break up the chapters. So you have like different products that you would see through Limbo. And being a crazy, crazy place, you know, you'd have automaton mice for your automaton cat to play with, that sort of thing. And it would be fun to bring those to life in the old like radio drama jingles that you would have, and do some funny old stuff. those were removed at the time just because of production, and you know, we felt that they didn't fit the tone of the book. But I think they could be made into some fun stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
And while we're on the subject, do you want to give yourself a good plug for your podcast? Because I'm sure I did a terrible job here. I'm just going off the top of my head. If you want to let everybody know with your podcast, what you're doing there, that you and DC are having fun with.
If you've listened to the Monster Guys podcast, you'll notice that we have taken a little bit of a break, but we're actually about to be releasing some episodes soon. The Monster Guys podcast covers all sorts of folklore and paranormal phenomena and other mythologies and fun stuff, and even goes into like stories and stuff by modern day writers. But we typically we like to dig in deep to story and fiction and folklore, and you know, we like to go back and study where the words come from, what the context to the culture was at that time. So, and how, for me, one of the biggest things is how those dots connect. So you might have, you know, the Farkalak, which is a creature from one of our books, over in Russia that swallows the moon. And in Norway, you might have the two wolves that swallowed the sun and the moon. And in China, you might have the giant wolf demon that flies over the moon. So you have these these creatures that intersect from completely different parts of the world, and that's fascinating to me. So I think I went off a little bit of a rabbit trail, but that's the type of stuff you can expect to find in the Monster Guys podcast, is exploring those depths and really digging into folklore. Yeah, and we do have... In that same podcast right now, we have the Fairy Tales podcast, which goes through, you know, European fairy tales, and we have the Yokai podcast, which goes through Japanese yokai and monsters. And those in time will be, those will have their own devoted podcasts, but right now it's all under the Monster Guys podcast.
Just do it like us. Just throw it all out there and give them different names. It's a lot easier having the same feed and just doing it the different name and then having your subsections on your website.
Yeah. Yes. When those are big enough, they'll be split up for people to enjoy. Because, you know, we have a lot of people that love all three, and then we have some people that just like to listen to, you know, the Japanese culture, and some that like the European culture. So, you know, we've got more than enough for everybody.
And with the Yokai podcast, that actually, to give a kind of a foreshadowing, or if not a early plug, for hopefully we'll get you and DC back on to go over your Yokai tales that you've also published this last year in 2016. So Logan and I, and I think Jonathan has been working on it. I don't know if finished, but Logan and I have knocked that out as well. So looking forward to visiting with you two about that as well later in a different podcast.
Definitely. I know he was excited to come on at a later date and talk about that as well. That's something that was pretty close to both of our hearts. And we both, you know, Japanese folklore is so weird and bizarre. It's something that still tickles me every time I read the same story. So
the big fairy toe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we mentioned this on one of the other recordings, and we're a little humble, so I don't mention it too often or try to do anything that's too grandiose. But I have to say, and it surprised me when you and DC opened the book up for us and mentioned us in the back. So that was very cool and very appreciative. So thank you for doing that.
So, no worries. You guys are awesome, and we love chatting with you. And anything story related, you know, he and I are both going to go bonkers over. So,
well, it was unexpected, and when he said it was possibility, I was like, well, it's kind of cool, but if it doesn't work out, I was like, okay, I understand. But when it actually happened, I was like, wow, you guys are awesome. So,
well, right back at you guys.
Okay. One of the things with the podcasting world, with everything that's been involved with the drawing, I don't know how much you want to get into some of the future projects you and DC are working on. Do you want to give any hints, or do you want to wait for a different podcast and go into that a little bit later?
We'll go into that a little bit later. Okay. There's some exciting news that we have, but we're not quite ready to release those things yet.
Okay.
Wouldn't mind teasing at it, but for now.
Stay tuned.
I have to keep the cat in the bag.
It's a good stay tuned feature right there.
Yeah. To be continued next week on the next radio drama.
There you go. Well, this is one, like I said, I encourage libraries out there to pick this up. We've picked it up for our library here. to be honest, I've kind of been a little bit of a hog with it. I had to read it first so we can talk with you. So it hasn't actually gotten into our library, but it will be in our library shortly. I did pick up the Yokai Tales. Jonathan picked up his own copy of Hollow World. When you're at conventions, you have to spread the money, and we try to help out everybody we can. So, but we appreciate you guys being there and being willing to talk to people. And just before we close off, you do go to the conventions. You kind of took a little bit of a break, but you're starting to ramp back up again. Of course, season's starting to go down. How much fun is that for you? Because you look like, I mean, this last one, I felt sorry for you guys, and I think that was an outlier, maybe, I hope. But I hope you guys look like you're having fun when you're in that moment where you're just having a blast. So how, kind of explain some of the stuff you do at the conventions and just try to interact with the people there and people that enjoy your work.
Well, I think that's the heart and soul of, you know, a lot of people still think of writing as something you do just behind your desk alone in a dark room with a whole pot of coffee in your boxers or something. And that can be true to an extent.
Depends on the time of day.
But as much as it is a thing of, you know, buy the book, it's as much of the thing as read the book and talk about the book. You know, as writers, we enjoy it when we get to hear people's reactions to the stories. And we, you know, as that follows, we enjoy getting out there with the fans and getting to visit with them. And when we go back to conventions where we've been before, a lot of the times we'll have people come by and say, you know, hey, this part of the book was my favorite part, or, you know, this one part, how could you guys do this to me? So that's something that, you know, it's nice to know that you know, there are people out there that read your stories, and that's always fun. As far as all the stuff we do at the convention, it can be very tiring. That's a lot of energy that we put into it, but at the same time, it's very fulfilling. You know, to get up there and talk about not just our books and stuff, but about folklore and about monsters, and, you know, we play games on stage with people and do improv based on monsters and with that flair. Yeah. And it's something that, you know, one of my favorite conventions was a teeny tiny convention, not a whole lot of traffic or anything, and not a whole lot of book sales, but I remember we did a panel on European monsters, and, you know, we were scheduled for an hour, mm-hmm. but after there was nobody scheduled for a panel in the room behind us, so we stayed for an extra few minutes, and we were like, hey, does anybody have any questions? We can open up for a quick question and answer session. And it ended up that what was supposed to be 15, 20 minutes tops turned into a two-hour question and answer setting.
That can happen.
And, you know, that's pretty awesome when people are curious about more information about these old myths and everything that you can't find a lot online sometimes. It's fantastic to have somebody talk to, you know, enjoy that with and be able to answer some of those questions for people. So we definitely enjoy it, and we go crazy. We do stuff on stage. We DJed the dance list last time, and have done that before, and definitely won't be the last time.
Now, you guys have your hands in a lot of stuff. We were kind of, like I said, I hope this last convention we saw you at was a little bit of an outlier, because you guys were running around pretty ragged. You were probably glad to get home to just relax.
Yeah, I was. But, you know, at the same time, I got to play Pokemon Go at a hotel that had, like, 2 hours there, so...
True, that is true. That was one of the fun things.
I think that was actually the week that Pokemon Go released.
Yes, it was.
Funny.
Yeah, it was.
I remember... Well, you know, you guys probably got a lot more of the convention than anybody else did. I remember the MC made a joke that, you know, we shouldn't call this year AFW, we should call it Pokemon Go Convention.
So, yes.
True.
Honestly, you guys probably got more of AFW than most people did that year.
I tried to download it. It would download, but mine would never open, so I was stuck. And Jonathan's would never download.
No, my phone was not compatible with it.
Yeah, and I don't have a phone in the first place, so.
Yeah.
Neither of us have.
But, no, I actually got to see firsthand some of Michael and DC's craziness at AFW. I had gone into a panel and I just sat down and DC was like, Jonathan, come here. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, when you know the panelist, sometimes yeah. that can be a detriment. Yeah. I don't know.
especially him.
And I was like, okay, what am I getting myself into? I got to play a little old woman with a craving for a big hairy toe.
There you go. And Logan had fun in your Jeopardy type deal. What was that? With the yokai questions and stuff. So Logan was one of the teams that either won or next got close to winning the contest.
It was a tie.
Was it a tie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys,
because I was part of that. I was the one who told Logan to come up.
Get up there?
Yeah.
So you guys try to have fun with everybody there at the convention. So that's definitely cool. That's very cool for you guys to do that. And
I mean, what's the point of going to a convention if you don't have fun, right?
Right.
That is true. Because, sleep, you'll get that when you get home.
Very true.
Well, we're going to let you go because you said you were wanting to sneak out. Michael, we appreciate you being on. Because this book is how it's formatted and we haven't gone into the second book, plus I don't think we would want to give anything away from the first book either.
No.
We do appreciate you coming back on again. It's fun. We'll have to do it again, like I said, with Yokai Tales and the other stuff that you and DC are producing.
But, anytime.
Hollow World, Escape from Limbo, Volume 1. Volume 2 is also out. You can get it from InsidiaBooks.com. That's InsidiaBooks.com. Books.com. Or you can go to the McGannon Group and look them up. You have the Wyvern's Peak Publishing page as well. You can look up MonsterGuys.com. You probably find them there. So you guys are kind of all over the place. Facebook, you can definitely get in touch with them on their Facebook page. So reach out to them. Michael and DC are a great bunch of guys. Michael, you're doing your first foray into doing your own independent stuff. You have done short stories, but I think this is your first major work by yourself, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. I look forward to more.
And this is one, like I said, recommended for everybody out there. It's a very quick read. When this day and age, when people are looking for quick reads, I think this fits naturally into the culture of today's time. So it might be a lot of books eventually, but they're doing it in succession in batches, so it's not going to be a heavy down. Well, that's a question. Is it going to be available digitally or just in paperback form?
Right now, just due to the nature of serials, it's only in paperback.
Okay.
We've discussed different options, but yeah, just the way serials are, we've only released it as paperback at this moment.
Okay. So definitely hook up with Michael on the websites. Probably, if you're nice enough to him, he might even say, hey, we might sign this for you. I'm sure they have something on there where you can buy signed copies as well. Interact with them on their Facebook page. They love interacting with their friends. We're happy and honored to call you our friends as well. So thank you, Michael.
No worries. We always enjoy visiting with you guys, and you guys are a blast to talk to. So,
and we've been trying to do a BS show for the last year, and it's kind of like some other things that have happened this last year. It keeps getting pushed back.
Yeah. So,
sorry, Michael.
Well, when we coordinate for those other episodes, we'll need to do that too. And I think we wanted to talk about like movies and stuff at one point as well.
Right, we want to do that. And we might do that when, like I said, I want to do a world building episode with you guys, and maybe we'll spin off on that into some of the pop culture stuff that's happening at that time as well. Talk about that stuff. So,
absolutely,
it's always fun. That's going to do it for us today. We hope everybody's been enjoying listening to us visiting with C. Michael McGannon, author of Hollow World, Escape from Limbo. Be sure to pick your copy up. We've been having fun with Michael. We hope everybody has as well. We will see you on the flip side. Bye, bye. Everybody.
See ya.
See you guys.
Bye. I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.